Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Experience Kills. I'm Richard, I'm here with Ben. Say hello, Ben.
Hello, Ben.
Oh, always the joker, aren't you? Right, I've been playing a really good game, Ben. You know what I've been playing because you sent it to me for a review.
It's one of the harder things I've had to send to you in a while because I really didn't want to give it to you. I wanted to keep it for myself, but I was like, no, Richard asked for it, I'll be nice.
I am going to make you regret that decision because The Surge 2 is absolutely fantastic. Loving it so far. I've been playing it all day yesterday, all day today. I had to force myself to take a break to try and talk to you about it.
Wow.
Yeah, loving it. So The Surge came out, what, 3-4 years ago, is it?
Probably more like, yeah, 2 or 3. It wasn't that long, no.
And it was a kind of low-key, low-budget sci-fi take on the Dark Souls genre, and there aren't many of those knocking around. It's mainly a fantasy genre, so it stood out for me as something that was interesting and just mixed it up a bit in that kind of field. And I quite liked The Surge. I'd say that deliberately. I quite liked it. Didn't get too far in. I didn't finish it. There was something that just didn't keep me involved, even though it had a really strong combat mechanic, some fresh new ideas. It borrowed some of the stuff from Dead Space, didn't it? So all the dismemberment, where you can target individual limbs to try and get specific bits of armor off enemies or try and get their weapons from them. If they're holding a weapon in their right hand and you cut their right arm off, then you get that weapon.
Yep.
It's a bit weird, but it's a clever mechanic. They've built on that in The Surge 2 and just made it so much more of an interesting world to explore and just be part of that I'm just totally soaking it up.
Man, I'm so glad you're liking it so much. I believe I reviewed the first one. I'd have to look back, but I think I did.
I've got it, but I don't remember buying it, so maybe I reviewed it.
Well, I feel like I would never have played this game if I hadn't been sent it for review. So I think I must have reviewed it when it came out, the first one. And I remember really enjoying the setting as well as the combat mechanics. Like, yeah, you were talking about the dismemberment mechanic, and it felt really inventive. And you say borrowed from Dead Space, but to be honest, I'm not sure it really was, because like while there is a similarity, it's not like it's a mechanic that really has come up very much anywhere.
No. But it doesn't feel the same either. It's a theme more than a mechanic.
And I can understand why you would connect it with Dead Space, because there's also a sort of tonal similarity between the two games. This is also a very sort of dour sci-fi sort of horrible future. And what I really want to know from you is, like, for example, is it the same character? Do they kind of double down on that setting? Do they expand upon it? I mean, I've watched some of the trailers and stuff, and it looks really cool. So just, yeah, tell me some more about that.
It's a different character. In fact, you can choose your character at the beginning. So it's much more in keeping with the traditional Dark Souls take on character creation, where you pick a specific class. It might be a medic. It might be someone who's into heavy weapons or engineering, or even a middle manager you can choose. I didn't choose him, so I'm not sure what works out there. But yeah, there's an interesting selection of characters. You can design their appearance, their clothes, but really the meat of the character creation is the game itself, with an absolute wealth of weaponry, armors, that you can put together in all sorts of configurations with different perks depending on the mix. There's absolutely tons of stuff to tailor your character to the particular playstyle that you favour, whether that's giant hammers, spears, lances, more intimate melee combat. There's all sorts of stuff in here, and there is so much detail in the not just the weapon design, but how those weapons function. There's a special move feature where if you're targeting specific limbs, you can then dismember that limb to get the piece of armor or whatever. But there's different animations for each limb and for each weapon, and it does a sort of cool Alan Wake style slowdown when you take these enemies out and cut bits off them. And it just looks really awesome and never gets old. There's just so much to see in terms of the you know, the weapon styles and how that plays out with, against different enemies. It's just really cool.
So have Deck 13, have they just sort of like doubled down and refined on the mechanics, or are there new mechanics that have been introduced here in the sequel?
I haven't played the original for a little while, but it feels fresh. There's a sort of battery mechanic. I don't remember that being in the first one so much. Maybe it was. But because you're a sort of cyborg with robotic parts strapped into your body, all of that is powered, and you need to increase your level to increase the level of power that you can output to charge better and better equipment.
Yeah, that was in the first one. Yeah.
But in terms of melee combat, where in Dark Souls you'd have a number of Estus flasks that you can recharge to get your energy back up by drinking those, but you've only got a finite amount before you go to a save point and then you get them all back again. It doesn't quite do that. The battery charge system in this is built up by combat. So the equivalent of an Estus flask is a battery charge. You have different cells that charge up, and using one cell will give you some health recovery. So depending on how good you are at blocking and not taking damage in the first place, you can build up a store of these battery charges to give you some health boosts when you need them, or just use them as you're in combat. So it's much more of an aggressive playstyle than something like Dark Souls, where it's quite forgiving if you just want to get in amongst it and start hammering buttons. There is a fair amount of forgivingness in that. It doesn't totally punish you for charging in. But that said, there is still some measure of skill that you need to get through. So there's different sorts of block mechanics. So if you hold the left bumper and press in a direction, it will block in whichever direction you push, and enemies will, if you time it right, be deflected away from you. So not a new mechanic, but in amongst all the other design choices, it feels really solid. And as I say, quite an aggressive play. You can really push enemies back rather than just cowering away from them and kiting them as you might in Dark Souls. So yeah, the combat works really well.
So sort of related to that, I was curious about the onboarding. I was curious about, because one of the things that pushes me away sometimes from the Souls-like games is that they can be very punishing from the early stages of the game, and therefore you kind of just give up on them. At least I do. Call me casual, call me a noob, whatever, but I don't always have the patience for them. And I thought the first Surge actually wasn't that sort of opposed to you getting into the game, as it were. So how forgiving? You mentioned that you could just get in there and wail a bit. But yeah. Is it really that easy, or are you going to get caught out and killed?
It's definitely not easy. I've died a bunch of times, as you would expect. But there's a really, really clever level of design in this that makes you... I suppose it pushes you back from the harder areas without you feeling too pressed into a grind. Where normally you might think, right, I know what the next bit is I've got to do, but I'm not high level enough. I'll go and do some regular bits first, and I'll power myself up so I'm ready. I've hit a wall on this where I found quite a major boss, and I couldn't see how I was going to get it. So I hit that point and thought, right, I'm going to go grind now. And as it turns out, I didn't have to just go back to familiar areas, because there is such a thick network of labyrinthine corridors and areas in this that you sort of pass by, and then going through again you notice things you hadn't spotted before, whether it's crates up against a wall that hide a corridor, or different lifts that you get access to, or there's loads of NPCs that will give you side missions, and they might allow you access to new areas by access cards and stuff like that, that I haven't run out of places to explore yet. So even though I've been bounced back by stuff that's too hard for me, it hasn't sent me back to an earlier point. It's just bounced me off in a different direction. And it's constantly surprising how many times I'll end up back in a place I've already seen, but from a completely different perspective. And there might be 5, 6, 7 different routes into one area, coming out of locked doors that you're just on the wrong side of. And it's just... You know, when we were talking about Decay of Logos a couple of weeks back, and saying how that was quite a facile take on the Dark Souls motif of locked areas opening back into old ones. This is exactly the opposite of Decay of Logos, where it's just got such a rich designed world, not just in terms of its mapping, it's really cleverly laid out in terms of its maps, but just the visual design of them as well is so rich and varied that there's just, it's just beautiful to see some of the sights in this game and to explore through them as well. It's the ideal mix, really, something that looks visually arresting but is also interesting to explore.
So I was going to ask you a bit about this, because the first game was a little bit more limited by the sounds of things in its scope and its size and its variety of locations, mostly because, you know, very cleverly on the developer's part, you know, dealing with limited resources, they decided to sort of focus on this facility that you were exploring and opening up. I believe it was called the Creo facility or something like that.
Yeah.
And then in the DLC, they started to really add the more wacky environmental aspects with the theme park and this sort of Old West, you know, Westworld inspired environments as well. And I get the impression from the trailers, this new game has got much more in the way of variety in the worlds and the locations you go to right from the offset. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, yeah. It looks much brighter, more open. It does have its dark moments too, but there's a lot of variety in here. So it starts off in a detention facility and you're basically breaking out amid some sort of disaster. You don't quite know what's happened. So you break out of this facility. It opens out into sort of highway sections and inner cities. There's a huge port section. I've just worked my way through a hospital. Loads and loads of different areas that look markedly different, to the point that you'll have no idea that you're coming back into an area that you've been in before, and then suddenly you're like, oh, that's this place. So however labyrinthine it gets, you always recognise a place that you've been before. It's not like you think, oh, hang on a minute, have I been here? You always know, because it's so visually unique.
I was going to say, do the variety in places, is that reflected in the enemy types as well?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a ton of different armour types, so you'll have fun going back to specific areas to try and lop off different arms and legs in a specific area where those armor types exist. There's a good spread of enemy types as well, whether it's flying droids, various humanoid type enemies that are some are quicker than others, some have got guns, some have got melee weapons, some use car doors as shields. There's loads of stuff to fight in this, and that's before talking about the bosses. I've only actually seen one boss, even though I've spent 2 days playing this. I've seen one boss that I can't defeat yet, and the rest of it has been lower level enemies. Although that said, I haven't been bored by any of it, because there are so many of them, and they're visually really interesting too. One point to note, that an important aspect of that is the 4K mode. Because by default it comes in a performance mode, which is really low res, and I was quite disappointed having played through the first few hours in that mode before I checked and found that there was a 4K option, and it makes such a massive difference to how that world looks and how immersed you are in the detail around you, not just in the environments but in the characters as well, seeing some of their facial expressions as you fight them. There's a lot of detail in there that you'd otherwise miss if you don't go for the 4K option. So if you can play on an Xbox One X, please make sure you turn that on.
Okay.
But yeah,
that's good to know that you have the choice, though, if you're all about performance. Yeah, that's really cool.
I wouldn't say it makes a big difference, though. Yeah, I think it's like I think that there's obviously a frame rate benefit if you turn the performance mode on. You can tell if you're just switching between the two. However, I've been playing in 4K mode for the past day. Haven't had any performance issues as such, aside from it being a slightly lower fixed frame rate. It's not like it chugs along or anything. It's absolutely fine, and it looks a lot better for it.
So it sounds like a stunning game that's got loads of really engaging action. Much in many ways, that engaging action was what drew me into the first one. But I've got to ask, storytelling, narrative, is there one, or is it kind of all environmental? Is it all just sort of like, you know, in a Dark Souls style, you know, read this item description to actually get the idea of the lore of the universe, or is there a more conventional narrative?
There is more. I've touched on this already, but there is much more NPC interaction in this. It's not the same as Dark Souls, where you might have a specific selection of NPCs that you constantly go back to. They might be in different positions. You'll see them move around the map, and they'll say different things to you, and you build up kind of a relationship in your joint adventures, I guess, because they're traveling along with you. It's not quite like that in The Surge 2. There are lots of NPCs for you to meet. They're typically fixed in one location, and they pretty much want to give you one mission. So it doesn't feel like you're connecting with individual NPCs quite as much. However, because there's many more of them, so far at least, I'm bumping into people all over the place. Because there's so many more of them, it feels like you're on a constant journey, exploring richly detailed environments rather than just it feel barren with the occasional character that, you know, sometimes crosses your path. There's plenty of people in the game, but more than that, I know it's an old trope, but the old audiophile thing, it's done pretty well in this, so that they're placed right where it needs to give you some exposition. Very similar to something like Dead Space. Dead Space did that really well, where it'd give you an audio log just before something important was going to happen, just to brief you on what this area is, what's just happened there, or challenges that you might face. And that does a really good job of filling in some of the lore around the environments that you're in, and some of the voice acting is pretty good as well in this. So even that side holds up. I mean, as a Souls type game, rich lore and narrative is not that genre's strong suit. It's normally implied or written in a wiki somewhere for you to read later, isn't it? But this does a really good job of bringing all that in game.
So for your character, because obviously you're saying it's like, you know, you're picking a class more than character, really, at the start of the game. Is the main thrust of your motivation just survival, then?
The plot of the game is that you've crashed on a plane somewhere in Port Nixon, and you have got to find out what's happened to you. You've got some vague memory of a child on board that was a survivor, but this child is missing. And you've woken up in a prison for some reason. So you're trying to figure out where the girl has gone and what your role in this is, and why no one recognises that you were a survivor. You've just been hidden away in a detention centre somewhere.
And mystery.
Woken up in sort of hospital robes. So, yeah, it's all very mysterious. But there's a good amount of exposition along the way. I haven't mentioned, like, you know, in The Division, you've got those echoes. Similar in this, well, exactly the same, actually. So you'll walk around and see these big swarms of nanobots flying around, and then they'll, as you approach, they'll show you events gone past of things that have happened in that area.
So, it's a really cool mechanic, that, actually. I really like that in The Division. What a cool way of doing environmental storytelling, but also kind of like connected to an audio log as well. That's a fun way of doing it. Awesome.
Yeah, you're right,
by the way. Shit, dude, I really do want to play this game a lot now.
It's really good. Yeah. So it's got that online connectivity as well, like Dark Souls, so you can see what other people have done. Like, you get a graffiti bot that you can put tags down on the floor, like Dark Souls, to try and indicate things that might be in the environments. You can warn people of dangers, tell them where treasures are, or just send them down a dark pit if you're that kind of person.
I'm guessing because you're playing it early, there's not that much of it in the game yet, though.
No, there's not that many people around, I don't think. There's this really cool mechanic, actually, where you've got a banner bot as well. So instead of just leaving graffiti down, you can leave a banner for where you've been. And the idea is that you leave that in as remote a place as possible. And the less people that find that in the next hour, the more money you get as a reward.
So that's so weird. I love it.
That is really neat to see. You know, no one has found my banner in the past hour, and you get an absolute crap ton of money for it. Or just chancing upon other people's and thinking, you know, how much effort it must have taken them to get there, and then you've just found.
Yeah,
it.
I mean, that is a form of storytelling, isn't it? That's like a, you know, oh, Jim got here. I mean, this guy got here. This random dude. I wonder what brought him here. I mean, I came here because of this, but, you know, I don't know. I think that's really interesting, and that's an innovative sort of, you know, development for the genre. That's really cool.
They've dropped a few ideas in like that. So if someone's just died in an area, you might find their body and you can pick up a bit of loot off it. There's also this thing where enemies will sometimes be flagged as revenge enemies. That means they've just killed another player in game, and you can get revenge for them and kill that enemy on their behalf and get some special loot off them. So they've thought of a few new ideas to spice this up and make the online connectivity a bit more meaningful. And they're not just living off the ideas of From Software. This feels like if From Software brought out a sci-fi game now, it would feel like they were ripping this off, which I think is the best compliment you can give this game, really. They've done a really good job.
That's big praise. High praise. Wow, dude. So, yeah. I mean, it sounds like we've come to the end here. You got any final thoughts or anything you wanted to say before we wrap this up?
I think I'd just encourage people to try it. It's a full price game. I know how that looks when there's so many games coming out. It's getting on for Christmas. But seriously, this is so well done. Like, as a Souls-style game with a unique spin on it, they've put a lot of work into this. So even if you played the original Surge and you kind of know what that was about, this feels much more accomplished to me, just in terms of just all of the combat mechanics are polished, the enemy design, the visual design, the environments, the narrative. There is so much packed into this. It's just really worth your time, so I'd encourage people to give it a go.
Fantastic.
I think that's us done for
and
the
I'll
Surge
add,
2.
If like Richard, you're playing, you know, if you're playing on an Xbox, the original Surge is available in Game Pass, so will be worth checking out if you have that subscription. And I know the guys at Focus Home and stuff have been doing like loads of free play days and stuff for the original one recently to try and get people to like remember this franchise that they created 3 years ago to, you know, very little fanfare at the time. But it sounds like they've done absolutely everything they needed to for this sequel to really, you know, blow it out of the park. So man, I want to play me some of this.
Well, you're gonna have to buy it, Ben, I'm afraid, having given me the copy, but never mind.
Hey, look, I don't mind spending money on good games, man, you know. But like you said, it is tricky at this time of year. I think that is fair to acknowledge that there's a lot of games coming out and stuff. But it sounds like this one is pretty unique, you know, and it's going to really set itself out there. By the way, one final question. Do you feel that you need to have played the first game to play this?
No, absolutely not. I don't know. Well, I haven't finished the first game. I don't feel like I am missing out anything. Not sure whether I am, but I certainly don't feel like this is an incomplete experience. Absolutely not. Yeah. So
that's kind of the vibe I got from this, that like the first game was almost like a test of concept, a proof of concept for their like idea of a Souls-like sci-fi game. And now this, though, even though it's called 2, which is sometimes not the best thing to do, but this is like a proper iteration, you know, a really big statement. We can make this game and it is awesome. So
yeah, this is a proper full game, not just we can do a game a bit like that. It's just this is totally their game, and they've obviously put a lot of love into it, so please give it a go, guys. But that's been us. We are Experience Kills. You can see our other videos, our podcasts. Just check us out everywhere. We're on all the usual podcast places, iTunes, give us a review and all that stuff. You can find us on Twitter at Experience Kills. Ben is on Twitter at DIYE, and I'm on Twitter at Colonel Red. So it'd be really good if you could seek us out, talk to us about what you think of the game, whether you're interested in getting it, whether you've played it already. Really excited to hear more about The Surge 2. It's one of the best games I've played this year. So thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Bye.